Welcome to Hot D, the officially unofficial podcast for House of the Dragon on HBO. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking Season 1, Episode 9, The Green Council. Aaron, what'd you think about this episode on second watch?
I continue to really like this episode, with the one exception of I think after I've seen the behind the scenes and all this stuff, I better understand why the showrunners did the prophecy gimmick thing, you know?
Okay.
I'm still unsure about that, but it's not immediately fatal flaw. I'm just kind of waiting to see how it plays out. And the second is the ending, which was fucking awesome and had me on the edge of my seat, because I was thinking as soon as Rhaenys bust out in her fucking badass armor, mm-hmm. and the two baddest bitches, the whole fucking Seven Kingdoms just come popping out of the floor of the dragon pit, I immediately thought, like, how the hell are they going to get the greens out of this? Oh my God, is Aemon going to come in with Vhagar and like throw her off, and she's going to come in from the window and start snapping, but she won't. Her ass is too big to fit through. So Melis, and she's so much faster, she'll be able to. And then she just screams in their face and takes off. And I'm like, wow. So I don't know about that. And I definitely want to talk more about the end of the episode, but I don't want it to overshadow what I thought was just a really gripping piece of filmmaking. Mm-hmm. This was like a political thriller.
Yeah.
You know, race against the clock. We've got to get control of the situation. We've got to manage it felt like a modern PR team managing a disaster. And I really liked it. I really God help me. Aemon is rising quickly to the top of my charts as far as favorite characters. I love this guy.
Right.
I love this guy. It must be an infuriating experience to be this guy, to be just so much better in mm-hmm. every way than your brother, but you got your eye torn out and everyone bullies you, makes fun of you, doesn't take you seriously. I liked a lot of the stuff in this episode. What did you think?
Yeah, I mean, calling it a political thriller is kind of right. There's a lot of intercutting of scenes in this, especially when they're looking for Aegon, that I really appreciated. Hard to recap when you're doing a podcast, but very riveting at the time. When, you know, the different factions are looking for him, right? And then you got stuff going on in the castle and it's really good. Really well crafted, this episode. And I on second watch was trying to decipher some of the things that I was confused by in the first watch. Mm-hmm. And some of them, it took literally watching the inside the episode that happens after the episode airs. And that cleared up some of it. Although I will say, I agree, I don't really like the choice that they make at the end of this episode with Rhaenys. Mm-hmm. But I went back and I looked at some previous episodes too to see, okay, am I remembering everything correctly? And does that track with why I felt the way I did about it in the first watch?
Right.
Alicent being so naive tracks way better when I don't have these lingering doubts that maybe she had heard something from the council talking about replacing Rhaenyra with her son. Because she just seems so naive in those moments, and I'm like almost unbelievably naive, because I thought people were semi-openly talking about this in front of her. And then it would just come down to, whether they're going to kill Rhaenyra or not. But she didn't even know they were planning to put Aegon on the throne. So it's an even bigger betrayal, and it comes as a bigger surprise to her. So that made a lot more sense to me in the second watch. And after going back and verifying, okay, none of this was actually floating around in the open.
No, I 100% agree. I think she's on her back foot this entire episode, essentially.
Definitely.
Catching up to what she thought would happen. But I think that the Greens, despite the haste, and you can tell that they had some planning, but I think Alicent is the one that delivers the real political masterstroke. Now, maybe Otto was mm-hmm. going to suggest this anyway. But as far as fait accomplis go, this is pretty goddamn good. You've got the whole capital unified, witnessing this person, the hand of the king, saying that the kings wanted it this way. You've got all the Kingsguard there, and you've got all the royal family with one conspicuous, and he's waving Blackfyre, the conqueror sword, and he's wearing Aegon's Iron Crown, and it just looks legit. And you've got every lord singing from the same.
If you don't think about it too much, right? Because like, imagine if like there was some, I don't know. It's not quite like that, but let's say like the State of the Union address was about to come up, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't know. You've got like a Speaker of the House or something introducing the president. But you know who the Speaker of the House is, and you know the Speaker of the House is supposed to introduce them, and then somebody else shows up and they call them the Speaker of the House and they introduce the president, and you're like, wait, what? Uh-huh. Like Christian Cole being there as Lord Commander of the Night or of the Kingsguard is kind of fucking insane when you actually like think about it.
It is, but like it's also them projecting their version of reality into reality and making people accept it and cheer for it. So like, yes, I agree that like more astute people or people who might be more for Rhaenyra's claim in the crowd probably were thinking all those things, but they're just, I think, outnumbered. You know, I mentioned like, again, 20 years ago, 20 to 1 odds against the woman backing the, and that was before everyone started whispering that her sons are bastards. And you know, like we saw what the small folk thought of the situation back when Rhaenyra was a teenager, you know, when they were running around doing mummers farces about it. Like, has anything in the last 15 years done anything to reverse that tide of opinion? Probably not. So, you know, but they did also make what I felt was real political errors, a couple of real political errors, too, like murdering the lords that defied you. When you could have like imprisoned, like I'm thinking about Lord Coswell in particular. Mm-hmm. You know, I remember like, you know, one of the things that Joffrey got yelled at for killing Ned Stark is like, you fool, you're almost guaranteeing his realm and bannermen are going to rise against us. Whereas you've held him hostage. We could have negotiated release. Yeah. We could have waited for everybody to cool down. We could have offered some compromise. We could have taken some, you know, some hostages. We got some of his kids here. We got things to work with, but you kill him and it's just, you got nothing but revenge.
Yeah.
And I wonder to what extent some of these other lords and ladies might have got the same treatment, how much that's going to, you know, Laerys's overreach is going to negatively impact them. But
it makes me wonder, does Laerys actually understand the political ramifications of all the things he does, or is he just kind of hot to kill?
Man, I don't know. He's a weird guy. Let's just put it out there.
If this episode didn't convince you of that, I don't know what will.
I'm not sure what his motive, like if his motivations are just feet pics, like then I'm all bets are off. I have no idea how this guy is like, you know, it's like Littlefinger plus Varys divided by pi. I don't know what that math works out, you know.
I've seen documentaries on serial killers that I can identify with a little bit. They make them empathetic. I don't know about the feet people. I honestly don't. Like, I don't know how to identify with him. I'm sorry.
Again, you could be into feet and not be creepy weirdo. You just can't be into feet like Laerys is and not be creepy weirdo. Just want to make sure we put that out there. I think this is a great episode. And I think it's... So, like, you know, I made a prediction, a very, very vague, alluded prediction at the end of the feedback podcast, which I'm going to repeat here. But, like, I think it's kind of a smart decision to just devote this episode to the Greens and their attempts to consolidate power. And then it's going to be, as an audience, we turn our heads to Dragonstone, and it's like, now what are you guys going to do in response? I think we're going to get a pretty fucking exciting finale, guys.
I would think so, yeah. I kind of expected that this is how it would go down. Like, the king would die, and they would need to stall a little bit for time, try and, you know, maneuver all the pieces into place for their perfect scheme to go off the way they want it to before there can be any kind of response.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And I'm really excited to see what happens when Team Black gets a hold of the information that they need. To catch up, because they're not going to be happy. They're not going to be happy.
Yeah, and so what do you do? Like, that's what's you know, do you Storm King's Landing? Do you, like, I know I asked you, I put you on the spot at the end of the Take podcast, but you've had a couple more days to think about it.
It depends a lot on what Rhaenys does.
You're the hand of the queen. What do you advise Alicent, or not Alicent, Rhaenyra to do?
I advise her to do everything she can to convince Rhaenys to join their cause, because that's vital.
Yeah.
Just like Alicent says in this episode, if they seem to be outmatched, there's likelihood that Rhaenyra will come in and actually try and strike at the capital. And I think that's what I expect would happen.
It's an immediate reprisal, get on your dragons and ride.
Yeah, before Aegon has a chance to stick with the people, right? Yeah. Get in there and say, well, this attempted coup, we put it down, and I'm actually the heir, because I have been for the last 20 years, and you've all known this, so... Yeah, try it. Right. But we'll see. I don't know what Rhaenys is going to do. Rhaenys feels like a wild card, especially after this episode.
All right, well, I'm curious to get into it, and I want to talk about... I want to talk about the beginnings and endings and the entire episode, so maybe we should get into it?
Yeah, let's do it. There's still lots of hot D left to talk about. We'll be right back after the break. Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
We've got lots of ongoing coverage this week, from book versus show comparisons for Hot D to the latest very special episode of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? But there are a couple of main events this week you need to know about.
Firstly, we've got a brand new commission podcast out this Tuesday covering the Raid 2, sometimes subtitled Retaliation. If you're a fan of martial arts films, this is one you don't want to miss. Iko Uwais is a rising star in the action movie world, and it's easy to see why. Join us on Tuesday as we dive into the bigger, badder sequel to The Raid, try and figure out which is better.
Then on Thursday, we're covering the season finale of Hulu's excellent period drama, Shogun. We've been waiting all season to see what Toranaga Sama's plan is, or if he even has one. It all comes down to this, and we couldn't be more excited. Join us on Thursday for what's sure to be an epic Shogun season finale podcast, and to find out if we plan to cover any related materials.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was, and those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim, order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar, then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live. And now, back to Hot D. All right, we start off with... I guess this is the hour of the bat. I don't know. The castle's completely quiet. It's very empty.
I'm going to go with the hour of the owl. I looked it up. Hour of the bat, of course, sounds like it's the blackest part of the night. That's actually the hour of the wolf, right before the sun rises. Hour of the Bat is immediately as the sun sets. It's dusk when the, you know, makes sense. Come out and start eating their insects. Hour of the Owl, as far as I can tell, is just in the middle of the night, the wee hours of the morning. So real Hour of the Owl shit happening right here in King's Landing.
Does the mouse get an hour? Hour of the Mouse? I feel like if the owl gets
owls
one,
around, nah, they're going to just sweep the hours clean of all rodents. No
all
voles,
hours?
No
shit.
Moles. Those owls just clean up.
All right. Anyway, a child walks down to the kitchen and tells Talia that Viserys is dead. She reports to Allison. Allison reports to Otto and tells him that his dying words were a wish for Aegon to be king.
Otto's like, oh, really? Like,
I can use that. I don't know.
I thought it was more of like, all right, my daughter came to play ball, you know? Like,
oh, yeah,
me,
like she's making
more
shit up too. Sure.
Right. She's already thinking of a pretext. Like, man, I thought I was going to have to sweat this.
There's another detail in this scene because I was wondering on first watch, did Talia tell White Rose every time I think of White Worm about the king's death. When did she do it? But obviously she did it when she lit these candles, right? This is a one
that's
by land, seven
that's
by
what
king's
I understood
death kind of thing.
That's
yeah.
exactly what I understood too, that they had worked out some kind of symbol like Paul Revere. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's what I got from that scene. So
it's smart because they don't draw a lot of attention to it. It's just you gotta kind of look at the purposeful look at her face and how she's kind of like intense about it and like, why are we watching this woman just going around fucking around in mm-hmm. front of the windows lighting? Yeah, but I got that too.
Signal her people. Who is this kid? Do we have any idea?
I think he's one of the princes, like one of that went to go check upon grandpa in the middle of the night. And but I don't know, because he's dressed in fine clothes like a prince.
Yeah.
But
yeah, which confused me.
I'm trying to think, because like Helena's kids are too small. Mm-hmm. I think Joffrey's too young. Like he's still just a baby, isn't he? Or no, Joffrey's
there might have been
probably
a 5-6 year jump. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it's one of the princelings. But I'm not sure why he would run to tell Talia mm-hmm. instead of like his grandma or his mother or anything like that. But it's some
maybe
identified member of the.
He's forbidden to go directly into the queen's chambers because he might see some nasty feet shit that she doesn't want to scar him with this young.
Is he the king's chamber pot boy? You know,
maybe
like someone that just changes his piss bucket out or something.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I was kind of curious about this because he, you know, also it could be that he didn't discover the, no, because it went right that to the, yeah, like this was like the first, and he ran to tell Talia. I got nothing on that.
Okay. I was just curious if we knew, but yeah, I don't know either.
Also want to point out, to be fair to Alicent, because that's one thing I was kind of watching, you know, to kind of like see what my gut feelings, but when she woke up from dead out of sleep, found out her husband's dead, she sobbed. Like, I think that her that first human reaction, I have no reason to believe that she was like acting or anything. Like, she seems genuinely bereaved and shocked and dismayed at many things happening this episode. Which, okay, let's go ahead and start talking about this. The prophecy thing.
Okay.
Everyone accepts, takes it as a joke. And after watching, I saw some interviews, and I watching the behind the scenes, I think this prophecy is inserted just so Alicent has a moral out.
Yeah. Yeah, she legitimately believes that he wanted Aegon on the throne.
And I don't understand why they felt that was necessary. Why couldn't she just be terrified that Rhaenyra is going to do to her what, you know, her father wants to do the Rhaenyra. Mm-hmm. And she can still be dismayed at the fact that, like, you know, it's like, well, I just want to take him prisoner or take hostages or something. You're talking about killing everybody in the dead of night. All that stuff still works. It's like they wanted to have Alicent be just completely naive about a lot of different things. And I'm not sure.
More sympathetic. I mean, it definitely makes her more sympathetic if you
think that
she honestly believes that this is true.
But I also had no terrible sympathy being sympathetic if she honestly believed that Rhaenyra is going to murder her children and extinguish her house, that she would take action. You know what I mean? Like, maybe I'm the weird guy because I've always felt kind of on my own island trying to explain this to people. It's like, Do you think she's making this up? Do you think she's not afraid? Do you think that she thinks that Rhaenyra is not going to do this to her?
Well, it's all theoretical, right? Like, that's the difference. Like, she has concrete, she has something concrete to grasp onto now with this prophecy and thinking, you know, assuming. And she doesn't realize that she's making.
It's theoretical in the same way that if you pull a knife on a cop within 10 foot of him, you might get shot. Like, the vast majority of the time, you're going to get shot. You might have 1 to 5 cops out of 100 that's like, whoa, whoa, buddy, and tries to talk you down because they care about you as a human being. But most people are going to draw down and blow you away because, you know, it's like, I think it's one of those things. Again, you know, it's long odds if you're betting on the realm to just, and again, I think they could have done more to change that, but.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, it's, in fact, I'm going to talk about it. I think I finally identified one of the primary frustrations on Team Green. Because I watched a lot of heated political discussions on Reddit. On r/House of Dragons. Not about Republicans or Democrats. About Greens and Blacks. And one of the chief things that the Greens seem to be saying is, what are we judging this series' morality by? Modern standards? Or are we talking about medieval standards? Because we're judging by medieval standards, then it's open and shut. Rhaenyra struck first. She shirked her duty. She's put bastards on the throne. That is de facto already. She's committed treason. Penalty for that's death. And oh, by the way, also, Allison's got all the self-defense justifications too. Done. We're on Team Green. And the Black's going to be come and be like, but you guys are all breaking the fucking law and you're provoking people. But and you don't think that a queen can sit on the throne. And they're like, oh, well, if we're judging by modern standards, the whole fucking monarchy's a bunch of shit anyway. So why don't we just pick the best leader and is the best? But then that's where I think the Greens get bit a little bit, because I feel like if you look at this show objectively and you're going to pick one of these kids to rule, you would go with Jace and Luke. You go with Jace for sure over Aegon.
Oh, God, yeah. He seems at least a little concerned with his image and history and, yeah, learning.
But I get the frustration of people. It feels like you're wanting to, like, want to say, like, oh, well, we're trying to be pro. You're saying a woman can't rule? Like, no, I'm not saying. I'm saying the medieval people say that. But if we're going to be saying that, then it's like, well, then the whole concept of monarchy is stupid and... So I kind of get
I'm a 21st century person watching this, right?
Right.
So of course I bring my own like biases and my own sense of right and wrong. And honestly, I don't judge them on like who struck first, all this stuff. I judge them not by the laws of medieval times or whatever, by ethics, by like, are you doing your duty? And it all comes back to Otto shirking his duties in favor of putting his own family ahead of the realm, right? Like, that's where I come back to the original sin.
Yeah,
he's less concerned about the realm and more concerned about his own power and prestige for his family.
See, that's I'm not sure I agree with that. It got muddied because his brother certainly feels that way. But like, I guess you gotta ask yourself whether Otto thinks that what he's saying is true too. But he, like I said, Otto's to blame for everything. Even if it's like, and the show taught us this in a microcosm when they showed his immediate regret at putting Daemon in as the city watch commander. He's like, oh, shit, I've been trying to get this guy to some place for keep him busy, but out of my affairs. And oh, I just accidentally handled him, one of the largest standing military forces of the kingdom.
Right.
That's also in charge of security, the Red Keep. That's also, and they're personally loyal to, oh my God, what? It seems like a guy who is always looking for the quick fix and not thinking about the long term.
Even though, like, you know, with the heir stuff, the succession, he's thinking definitely about the long term. So,
but
in certain matters, he's telling her that like she's going to kill your kids 20 years from now if you don't. Put a stop to it or get things in place to prevent it. Yeah, that's
but Otto's insane thought that if Viserys dies and the throne passes to Daemon, it's the worst thing that can happen. Is what made the king force the hand and declare Rhaenyra the heir.
Sure. Sure.
So it's like, again, that was a short-term fix that fucked him on the long-term, because now he's got this situation where he's got to hope that Allison can have kids with the king. He's got to hope that the king's going to marry her in the first place. He's got to, you know, there's a lot of, I don't know. I feel like he just constantly makes that same fuck up where it's like, oh God, I'm afraid of this thing. What's the first thing I do to think of fixing that thing? Oh shit, that thing is now just a bigger problem. So yeah, fuck Otto for sure.
This is why I'm gonna have to see.
I guess that's my Leal test for Team Green. Is can you accept that Otto Hightower is a motherfucker of the highest order and is probably the proximate cause of a lot of the problems in the realm? If you want to put aside the realm's just sexism and all that kind of stuff, but I think I don't know. HotD@BallBoob.com. If you'd like to take me up on that, I think they would say something along the lines of maybe Otto overreacts here and there, but he was right that Daemon would not be a good king.
I think that's true.
It was true back in the day. I mean, we're not talking about Daemon today, even though I still don't think he'd make a terrific king. And then the second thing is he right about the way the realm just won't accept a woman? And even if the hand cooperates, like that just means his neck's going to be in the noose, because somebody's going to put forth a male heir alternate as soon as their one that was existed.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. There's a lot of what ifs, right? Like, what if Otto, instead of plotting behind the king's back to usurp the throne with his own grandson, had instead put all of his weight and his considerable forethought and pressure onto the realm to accept the rightful heir? You know, there's a lot of weighting that could be done to those scales in 20 years, but he didn't.
I agree. But also that's a hypothetical counterfactual too,
exactly.
Because it could be that they spend all the time grooming Rhaenyra and making sure she's always at all the right events and doing all the royal announcements, and she's just as groomed as a fucking Colorado ski slope, and they still put her up there, and 19 out of 20 lords say, nah, fuck this, where's the nearest male heir claim? Banners behind him, boom, we go for it. But I don't know. If all the dragons, though, are united behind her, you got to wonder how successful any of that
makes
stuff
it scarier to oppose the throne, sure.
Because Otto's the reason that the House Dragon, more than anything, is split.
Yeah, I love talking about this stuff.
Again, feedback, hotdballmove.com if you want to make a claim for why Otto Hightower is not the worst fucker on this show. Because, like, if you're green and you're like, okay, well, Allison's this and Allison's that. But as long as you say Otto is a shit bird, then I'm cool.
Point. That we can admit to. And Laris is just... I don't know if he's like an agent of chaos. He's not even an agent of chaos. He's doing the will of his lieges, but like...
I think he's... do you think he's fucking up this episode? Or do you think he's felt the power shift?
I feel like there might be some slight fuck-ups. Maybe we can talk about that when we get to Laris' scenes. But here's the thing with the Team Green, Team Black stuff. I'm on Team Black because Otto is such a shit. And no one on Team Green is standing up and saying, Otto, you suck. Fuck you. We're not doing any of your stuff. And they have the reasons, right? Like you said, all this stuff about the realm not accepting the rightful heir. What they need to do, if they want to convince me to switch sides here, is show me that Team Black can be just as bad, if not worse. And then we have a real debate, because right now it's very clear for me, I'm in Camp Black.
Well, there's a lot of show left, not necessarily in this season, but in the years to come. So we'll see if they can hold true in that latter perspective. But
and I can see it. Like Daemon is on the ragged edge always. So
yeah,
we'll see.
And
how
I
it
also
goes.
Think that I don't know. Like, you could make a case if you're green that regardless of what is right and what is wrong from a legal perspective, that if Rhaenyra wanted to do what's good for the realm, that she would abdicate and spare the realm the bloodshed, even though that puts Aegon, who is a terrible human being, onto the throne. And that's the thing. It's like, man, I think that George himself weighted the thumb pretty fucking hard on this kid, because all this stuff about him, like in the books, he's found not in the Great Sept of Baelor, but at a child fighting pit with a 12-year-old's mouth on his cock.
Oh, like, Jesus.
Imagine
if you
showing,
can make it any worse.
So it's like And I think the show's leaned into the moral rectitude of the Hightower position and the extreme contrast between that and Aegon's actual behavior. Mm-hmm. And Rhaenyra, who's been, you know, what I would consider an ethical slut. God sure. love an ethical slut. Yep. Not telling any lies. Everything's out on above the board and on the open. But has sons who seem really well adjusted and mm-hmm. have maybe not studied the blade and have the biggest dragon like Aemond, but are taking their shit seriously and seem like they're kind and... Again, well adjusted and not doing a bunch of deviant weird shit.
Except for maybe Luke gets a little too much of a kick out of the pink dread stuff. Well, we'll see.
Yeah,
he's still in the air on Luke, but.
But yeah, I feel like that, man, if Aegon was just like, if they just made Aegon like timid or just not as, you know, like
not
as serious,
suited, but not
like
psycho.
If it's serious. Yeah. Then it would be a lot easier to be like, okay, well, maybe Green's got a point. But mm-hmm. man, Aegon is just a worst, y'all. He's just a worst.
Him with Otto, and yeah, it's a real shit show over there in House Green. All right, let's move on. Otto tells a small council that the king is dead. They reveal they've been plotting to replace Rhaenyra with Aegon for quite a while, much to Alicent's dismay. She realizes they're going to have Rhaenyra killed and objects. Beesbury also objects, so Criston Cole kills him. And that does not sit well with Sir Harold, who decides he'd rather wait for a king to be appointed to resume his duties than carry out the wishes of the usurpers. And so he walks out.
I gotta say, I like Sir Harold a little bit more on subsequent watches. Because number one, it's like, I don't know what you would do as a Lord Commander, where you've got the queen swearing that the king changed his mind at the last minute. And you're in absence of a king, you got to listen to the hand, but they're trying to usurp the what you understand as a rightful, you know, heir. And, you know, it's like, I don't think he did worse than Barristan Selmy when he had the same kind of, you know, where he had a signed order by the king that said that, you know. And then, like, the other thing is Otto forbid anyone from leaving the room. Fucking Sir Harold don't give a shit about what Otto says. He just marches out of that room and is like, you can stop me if you want to, Cole. But so I don't know. Like I said, I think he wanted to be as neutral as he could. And he wasn't going to let his gold white cloak be stained with the because the other thing is, I think back about he was Princess Rhaenyra's sworn protector once upon a time. And they're ordering him to go over there and murder her whole family in the dark of night. And that's too much for him. So like. Sure. I don't know. That's worth something. It's not quite as craven and I was thinking on my first watch.
I'm definitely on Sir Harold's side here. I think he lets the murder of a council member drop a little too easily, but that's not necessarily his job.
And he's not in favor. He wanted to take the guy into custody and he tells the high, you know, Otto's like, is it really going to come to this? Like, we're going to be doing this kind of crap.
Yeah, he's definitely got the moral high ground here, I think. He sees that there's something going on here. He's not quite in the loop enough to know exactly how all this should play out and who's got true information, who doesn't. So he just quits. And I think that's the best possible decision for him. And it really gets to Criston, too. Like, I love that shot as Harold walks out of just... They show him walking out in the background while it's close up on Kristen's face. And you can tell he feels that he's betraying his duty here.
No, he knows that there goes the real deal and I'm counterfeit.
Yep.
I know deep down that I'm not worthy of this.
And yet he does nothing to rectify that. He stands there and he says, yep, that's who I am now.
Another, you know what? Yet another rage killing by Sir Criston Cole.
Yes, that's no
this
good.
This guy is turned into, you know, a full-fledged monster. Like, he's just out of control. Like, that didn't seem like it was even this sanctioned by anybody in the room. He just, like, shut up, old man, and bashed his head in.
That's what I mean. I said in the instant take, it feels like people just, as soon as they get a hint of treason, they execute you just on the spot.
Which we got to say, like, that Lord Beesbury, another real guy to the realm. He was like, I think I like his quote in the book a little bit more. He's like, I'm old man, I may be, but I'm not so old to forget the oaths that I swore. Where then you had the Lannister kid who's like in his, I think, mid-20s in the books. Like, what are you talking about? That happened like 20 years ago, old man. I was a child. I didn't swear shit. And that's one of the problems is a lot of this is... medievally speaking, a generation ago. So a lot of these lords can stay with a clean conscience. I didn't swear to nothing, you know?
Sure. A lot of them are dead.
But yeah, I thought that was pretty cool.
I like seeing the gears, you know, kind of start turning here, with everybody saying, okay, well, we have allies here. We have potential enemies here. We need to shore them up, maybe make some marriage alliances. It really makes you feel like they had been planning this for a long time and they know where all the pieces are on the board.
Oh, yeah. They've got to ready snatch these two City Watch commanders because they're loyal to Daemon still. And I thought the one thing that's really interesting is them talking about dividing the treasury and spiriting away for safekeeping, which it's like, so what happens if Rhaenyra would sack the capital? And then she's like, well, you know, she's got no money to pay for anything. Like, it seems like this is going to be a big fucking problem for Team Black to win back, even if they do manage to get the capital, you know?
Yeah. Then Daemon might wish that he had some friends over in Essos, some moneyed friends.
Yeah. Is it too late to marry one of the Elena's girls to the...
It's a Pintos?
To the Sea Lord of Braavos
to get out of the Iron
Bank. Is it too late? Do we have another one of them? Any daughters in the land?
Sure. All right, let's move over to Alicent and Otto going to find Aegon, but he's nowhere to be found. Alicent tells her other children that Viserys is dead. Actually, Aemon doesn't need to be told. He just kind of senses it when he walks in the door. And Otto asks Sir Eric, and I only know this because he corrects him? No, that was last episode. Otto has it down. Otto knows these twins by the back of their head, apparently.
Of course he does.
He asks him where Aegon is, but he doesn't know, and then Otto commands him to go into the city with his brother in secret and find him.
Yeah, I thought, so Helena is interesting because she repeats there's a beast beneath the boards, and I still, okay. I think there's definitely a fulfillment of this prophecy with Melis busting out of the floor of the dragon pit. But again, if I'm going to be a stickler, that's stone, not boards. And as soon as she says that, Aemon walks in and the camera locks right on him. I'm telling you, there's something beastie and boardy about this kid.
Beastie and boardy?
And this nothing. The reason I'm free to speculate on this is because there's nothing book about this. Like, this is something that they've, this Helena being kind of like this prophecy engine. There's lots of different possibilities. The one that doesn't makes the least sense is Aemon in this context. But yeah.
Like that she's needle pointing spider things here. That's kind of funny.
Oh, so that's an interesting thing is like I've noticed they fleshed out the sigils of the children in the intro. Now you've got Aegon, who is, I don't know what this icon is. It looks like a globe with a crown around it and a naked woman chained to it. So that's Aegon's sigil, I guess. Helena's is a spider. And Aemon was a blue sapphire, which is interesting.
Huh. Why? That might be spoilers.
Why indeed?
Why
indeed, Jim? I thought it was mildly interesting that the kid's got a blue sapphire for a symbol.
All right. Is there a team blue later? That can't be right. I don't see any team blues in the future.
I want the damn rainbow. Team reds, team yellows.
You got like the concept of purple states in our political system where you've got like a mix of red and blue so much that they...
Right.
They're kind of swing states, it's purple. Yeah. What would the black and green be? I mean, adding black to green just makes dark green.
Olive green. That's what I said. I'm trying my best to be olive green on this podcast, and we'll see where it gets me.
Fair.
But yeah, Sir Eric's been he is the kid's, Aegon's, the prince's sworn protector, and Otto tries to take him to task for it. He's like, look, he abuses his authority. I have to listen to him. And then when I turn my back, he runs away and uses these damn secret passages. Otto doesn't have too much to say about that.
Yeah.
Oh, the other thing is, I thought it was really ironic that when Alicent walks in, Helena is lecturing the serving girl about her kids. I think about how it's our fates to crave what's given another. If one possesses a thing, the other wants to take it away. Pretty on the nose for the events of this episode.
Yeah, totally. So Rhaenys is locked in a room, and she sees all the servants in the keep being rounded up and put into cells. By Laerys, Laerys, is he the one who's actually doing this?
So they finally established his position. I don't know why they've been so coy with it, but someone calls him the Lord High Confessor.
They do? Okay.
So he's involved. He is essentially the head jailer of the black cells, and he's the guy that tortures people for information. And technically, he should have been on that Green Council. I don't know why the Lord Confessor is not sitting in on any of the plannings, but... But yeah, that's where he just hangs out in the jails all day.
Great.
Apparently, when he's not looking at feet.
Yeah. I mean, imagine the views of feet you can get in the jails.
He's not beating meat or looking at feet. He's down there in them jails. And that's a Laerys guarantee. That's a Larry guarantee.
He's Kristen.
Working for you, Westeros. That's his campaign ad.
Ugh. Kristen tells Alicent that Otto has sent the twins to find Aegon, and Aemon says he knows the kind of things that Aegon gets up to, and he takes Kristen to go look for him. Here's the thing about this scene. Like I said, I understand what's going on here a little bit better, that this is a race to get to Aegon to try and influence him into either, if you're Otto, decreeing that Rhaenyra is to be killed, or if you're Alicent, making sure he doesn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
They needed a line in this scene. They needed a line from Alicent to tell them, look, if he finds Aegon first, Rhaenyra is dead, and I don't want that. That's all they needed. Just one line to Kristen.
Yeah, I don't think it's as necessary as they needed a scene later on in the episode, but I do feel like I don't know. I felt like I mostly connected with it just intuitively on the first time through. And the second time through is like, oh, yeah, it's obvious. She wants to make sure she tells her son, you know, to do mercy and not listen to your granddad's burn it all advice. So I don't know. Like, I do like when people just show, not tell.
Mm-hmm. I do, too. But I also it, like right? to understand what's going on. And I definitely didn't the first time around. I was just like, why?
It's a thin line for sure. It's a thin line for sure. I do wonder, did you clock the sexual tension between Alicent and Cole?
The tension, yeah, definitely. I mean,
the fate of the Seven Kingdoms depends on it, as does everything you feel towards me as your queen. And just the way it was, like, I do think they have this kind of like, he's a kept man or something. Like, you know, he's like that's part of. I don't know. Maybe she's learned this from Larry, but it does seem like the upper hand she has in relationships is based on weird sexual dynamics.
Yeah, certainly a good chunk of it. And which keeping him from killing himself when he was younger, but I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know how much he values his life. Yeah, that line, everything you feel for me as your queen, I feel like that also is not just meant to say, hey, Kristen, this is super important to me, but, and not just from like, oh, I need you to do this for me, but also, I don't actually want Rhaenyra dead. I still have some affection for her. If, you know, you don't find this, she's like putting her love for Rhaenyra into this quest, right? And trying to, like, without saying, hey, you must love Rhaenyra, go help her not die. She's trying to say, like, do it for me. But really what she's saying is, do it for Rhaenyra in terms that he can understand, I think.
I still like to think that he's a caged, sexy beast. And that's
something I agree with that.
That's a dynamic they're getting off on. But I also think that you're probably right in that the full scope of what he feels towards his queen is probably some sort of attraction. It's probably some sort of profound gratitude for redeeming him, because he thought that he was like a hellbound sinner, and she helped him take the faith of the Seven into his heart. And so he owes his life, his position, his prestige, and, you know, whatever erotic charge. So it's like, yeah, it's a pretty... It's a pretty heavy thing. I just thought it's like it was definitely given with a little bit of a, I don't know, sexual spin to it.
Oh yeah, I think so.
As far as now, Eamon's an interesting guy because as the episode develops, I think he volunteered to go on this scouting mission just because that's a box that he checks off to be king. He's like,
look, I tried to find him.
Exactly. I didn't, you know, don't nobody can say that I didn't try my best to find my brother and it just turns out he was dead or hot. I think that this was all an act, and kind of like there's a point in the episode where he's like, yeah, we've done our duty. It's now I'm now going to go find because I'm expecting my brother to be dead and I'm going to go be found now. But I thought
why
that
would
was
he expect. Why would anybody expect Aegon to be dead in this moment? Is it because they think maybe their plan got out? And well, Rhaenyra is striking first, or
that's the thing is like as crap. Like that's the thing about being paranoid is like if you're really good at it, you have to assume the other side is at least as paranoid as you, right?
Yeah.
So like, if what if Rhaenyra has wheels within wheels and she knows this, you know, that Aegon goes at Khaer Housen
and has
she
a just spy has network some within the castle, within the keep,
exactly,
right? Just like Otto does and the White Worm does. Yeah.
And I do like that a lot of this stuff is just suggestion and inference. But I think it makes a lot of sense. And this is a Game of Thrones. This is a game played in the shadows and with whispers as much as it is with fire and blood and steel. And I really like that. I really like that aspect of it.
Yeah, I was actually shocked to find out that Otto knew about the White Worm's spy network all along.
Well, they so he used this before to get the bomb on Rhaenyra and Daemon. And it was definitely mentioned as the White Worm. He didn't know who the White Worm was, but he's used her before. He's used their information before.
Huh. So they're meeting for the first time.
This is the first time officially they actually meet face to face. Yeah.
I assume all these notes that he's been writing, and we see another one in this episode, have been part of that operation,
could be,
right?
Could
like
be.
He's maybe exploiting them and using White Worm's network for his own purposes with these notes somehow.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, obviously he's not sending notes to people to let them know, hey, the king's dead. He doesn't want anybody to know that.
Right, right. Yeah, this is, man, speaking of that, there's a lot, there's a much more energy in this than in the books. This takes place over several days, and there's this lurid thing of the king rotting in his room while the greens are solidifying their power, and they're holding everybody in the Red Keep, and they're not sending any ravens, and there's no bells tolling. I actually think this is a big improvement that this all goes down in a 24-hour period. Like the sun sets, the king dies. The sun is not going to set again before they've got a new king on the throne. And that sense of urgency, because it kind of meanders in the book, honestly. But that sense of urgency, number one, it burns through a lot of pages too. I think we've gone through a third as many pages in this in the book tonight as we have the entire season. Yeah, but it lended a real sense of urgency and kick to all these scenes where you just felt like people are kind of flying by to see their pants and and, you know, doing desperate gambles to get hands up on this person or that person.
Yeah, leaves a lot of wiggle room for especially Allison to catch up to the plot here.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, Aemon takes Kristen to the Street of Silk to look for Daemon, and they ask a woman at the brothel if she's seen Daemon, but not Daemon. Look for Aegon. They don't care about Daemon right now. If she's seen Aemon or Aegon, but she says he's got less discriminating taste than her. I love Aemon in this scene. His lines about I think he was talking about becoming a man or whatever. I don't know. He said time to get it wet.
Yeah.
Hilarious.
That was just sexual education. I don't know. I almost gagged at Sir Criston Cole saying when he uses this vulgarity, every woman is an image of the mother to be spoken of with reverence. Like, yeah. Shall we roll the tape from you two episodes ago? this guy's so full of shit.
Right, right.
I mean, there's a lot of people full of shit on both sides, but this guy in particular is just the worst kind of religious, holy rolling hypocrite.
Oh, yeah. And those moments where, you know, you see the cracks when he, you know, smashes Beesbury and stuff. Like, obviously there's a lot going on. This is just a raging storm underneath the the veil here.
Yeah.
So we're about to get into a lot of intercutting, and I'm going to try and do my best job here. But boy, it's not easy. So we go to Otto, who tells the lords who pledged their banners to Rhaenyra about the situation with the king, changing his mind on his deathbed. And a couple of refuse to pledge to Aegon, but Caswell bends the knee as Laris watches. And the ones that refuse are just kind of removed from the chamber.
Yeah, there's...
I assume they're imprisoned, but I don't know.
Well, that's interesting. Mildly interesting. We'll have to see if we wait to await their fate. I talked about Lord Coswell before, that he's kind of lord of this place called the Bitter Bridge. Or is it the Blood Bridge? I think it used to be called Stony Bridge, and there was this big battle fought and made the branch of the trident in which it bestrides run red with blood for like days or weeks, and then it got called, I think it was Blood Bridge or Bitter Bridge. But I think that what you're supposed to understand, and Lady Fel, we barely know anything about, except for that she did defy King Aegon and got arrested for it.
House Fel keeps its oath, and that's how House Fel fell.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm getting confirmation it is the House Bitterbridge from our producer. But I think you're just supposed to understand that, you know, she doesn't have very many allies. Like, it's kind of shocking how many people took the kneel as soon as, like, before mm-hmm. Otto even started talking. And you think those are the people who are part of the inner conspiracy. And then you see, like, all these lords and ladies kind of look at how, like, you know, about a third of us already kneeled. And when as soon as Otto gets done speaking, like, I'm going to kneel too. And then when the lords and ladies get challenged, like, everyone buckles, even Lord Coswell, which I think, honestly, don't be a Ned Stark. Even if you're a Leal, even if you're the Lealist of Leal, don't fucking throw your life away in some hopeless gesture of, like, do a better Lord Coswell. Like, mm-hmm. if Lord Coswell had an ounce of creep in him, if he had the amount of creep that's in Daemon's little toe, mm-hmm. he probably could have gotten away and warned Rhaenyra and given her a lot more hours to deal with this situation. But I actually respect the guy who kneels falsely to go and to kneel another day. Like, that's smart. That's playing the game there.
Yeah, and you haven't forsaken anything. You've told dishonest people a lie in order to... Right. better position the honest people.
Well, that's even a better take on it. Like, yeah, people who, like, you know, you don't have to throw your pearls before swine. Honor amongst these people means nothing. They're trying to steal the throne. So yeah, I think Lord Coswell was pretty fucking based. He just wasn't very good at the spycraft.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's like, I'm just gonna get all my fancy clothes and ride openly out through the gates, and what could possibly go wrong, you know? Mm-hmm. I've sworn my oath.
Yep. All right, the twins find an underground child fighting pit where Aegon likes to spend his time. He's apparently even making fighting bastards of his own. Sir Arik, I don't know, says they can't make Aegon the king with as completely fucked up as he is. And Arik wants to carry out their duty. And then someone named Jane approaches him with an offer to have the White Worm tell that just the hand of the king only where Aegon is. And they follow her.
Yeah. Are we going to go back and catch up to the Aemon stuff, or do we already dispense with the Aemon stuff?
No, I'm doing... So this is super intercut, so I'm doing...
Okay.
Like,
all right, gotcha.
Yeah,
okay.
Some rejiggering, but yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting, because I felt like it was, for someone who knows the books, it was extremely hard to keep track of which brother was arguing for which point of view. And in fact, I'm almost morally certain the subtitles are wrong in at least one of these scenes.
Oh, no.
I think, because I don't understand the exchange that you just, you know, that like Arik was saying the value of doing your duty. And he's the one that's the sworn protector would know this stuff more than the other. And the other brother, who's Arik, who appears to like try to stay neutral or let his brother, like he's the one that is saying that, oh, well, we don't know everything about, like, or no, he's the one that's saying that this guy's unfit. Like, It didn't make sense.
It's possible I'm getting these names wrong.
No. I actually sweated the details. Definitely. I sweated the details because I was like, what the fuck? Some of these exchanges I thought were a little bit what the fuck. And it's happened before. We've had blown subtitles on HBO productions. Uh-huh. Or it could be that they're just showing these brothers are really conflicted. And that's the thing. There's not really an easy way out when you're a Kingsguard and you're got an unworthy king. Like many, many Lord Commanders and better Kingsguard than them have written very eloquently about the worst thing is to be a servant of an unfit master, man. There's no way out with your honor. You can do the right thing, like Jaime Lannister, and get branded a Kingslayer for the rest of your life.
Right, right. No, I really hope Harold Westerling shows up on Team Black at some point. I hope that's where he's headed. That seems like the safest place for him to go. After forsaking his duty, certainly, at least in the eyes of Otto, I'd say he did.
Yeah, we'll have to see.
I mean, Aegon is fucked up, man.
That kid fight was hard to watch. Like, so many of the kids are just like scared and like cringing in the corners, and they're being pushed into it. And like, you know, you imagine you have you're 10 years old and you're having your teeth filed. And I mean, it's like. That's one of the things I think that the book and the show is doing well is to show, like, you know, just how kind of random and wretched your life is if you're a poor person. You know, like, you just, there is no protection for you. This is in the capital fucking city, by the way, that has a large and established and paid for police force. You'd think that'd be the safest place if people had the highest standards of living. But no, it's fucking squalid. The kids are just bought and sold for, I thought I was telling that the Oryx. Mentioned that, like, you know, it's like King Aegon fills his gullet on this, and or these kids are put to this and worse purposes. Like it's and it really puts heat into the White Worm later when she's, you know, taking Otto to task for it. But
and I have some newly formed opinions of White Worm on this episode, which we'll talk about when we get to her scene with Otto later.
Let me ask you this. You think if Daemon is still the captain of the City Watch, this shit's going down? I mean, the man's not above murdering his own wife for expediency and murdering a servant man for to have his wife's beard flee. But, like, does Daemon turn a blind eye to child sex rings and child fighting rings? I don't know. He doesn't seem like he's that kind of depraved.
No, he definitely wouldn't be there watching it and rooting for it and creating fighters of his own. I don't know. Who's running the City Watch now?
They have not mentioned. They just replaced a couple captains that might have been loyal to Daemon, but...
Yeah, okay.
Because the last we ever heard of any of the power structure was when Harwin Strong was one of the captains.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I'm looking at Aegon now way different than I used to. I thought of him. These last two episodes have done irreparable damage to his reputation in my mind.
Yeah.
Intentionally, right? I mean, that's what they were aiming for. Like.
Yep. Seems like
he's raping servants. He's apparently, like, I don't know where these bastard Targaryen fighter children are coming from, but probably not from a wholesome place. Uh-huh. And then he's off, you know, watching and participating in these fights. I have to make at this point comparisons to Joffrey. Like,
yeah,
they weren't warranted before the last two episodes and maybe even before this episode. But this is a bridge way too far.
Yeah, I think I said when he went from, like, pinching, I don't know, when he started sexually assaulting people, that's where it's like, yeah, but now this is like, you're going into, like, where you're going to get, you know, like, even among other deviants and people in serious felon communities, you're still going to be like, what the fuck, dude? So, yeah. Like, you're going into another...
Like, you go to prison... And people find out what you did to get there, and they're like, "Oh, we're gonna fucking kill you." Yeah,
you're gonna look at your papers, and you're gonna get fucked. It's not gonna be. It's not gonna be pretty. So yeah, it's like you're through several moral event horizons to get to this level. And I think
definitely,
I think that he's now in the Joffrey zone.
Absolutely.
There's only one zone blacker than that, and that's Ramsey Bolton. I think that's like maybe one circle blacker.
Ooh. Maybe. We should do a whole episode on that. On the darkest greens.
Who dwells in the lowest circle of hell in Game of Thrones?
That'd be fun. All right, Aemond gives up looking for Aegon. As next in line for the throne and having prepared his entire life for it, he's just fine with Aegon not wanting to be found. He wants to be king.
There's still lots of hot D to talk about. We'll be back right after the break.
Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, if very special isn't your speed, we've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd.
FX is adapting James Clavell's best-selling novel, Shogun, into a 10-part miniseries this spring. Set in the shogunate period of Japan at the turn of the 15th century, Shogun depicts the rise of a feudal lord to Shogun, as seen through the eyes of a shipwrecked English sailor. It's loosely based on the real-life exploits of William Adams and Tokugawa Ieyasu.
Shogun has already been successfully adapted back in 1980 with a widely acclaimed miniseries starring Richard Chamberlain. Featuring intricate plots, political scheming, complex characters, and thrilling action. This time, husband and wife team Justin Marks and Rachel Kondo try to recapture the successes of the novel and early adaptations while increasing the levels of historical and cultural accuracy that are often perceived as flaws of this and similar works.
Starring Hiroyuki Sanada from The Last Samurai, Mortal Kombat, and John Wick 4, with Cosmo Jarvis of Peaky Blinders, Raised by Wolves, etc., joining the truly massive cast required to bring this complex world to life. Join Aaron and I each week as we deep dive into each episode, uncovering the mysteries, the intrigue, and the glory of Shogun.
Shogun premieres on FX Hulu Tuesday, February 27th, with a two-part debut. Our podcast will release each Thursday thereafter. Get our Shogun coverage by searching for Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
And now back to Hot D. That's why I said I'm really taking a shine to this guy, because again, I'm not saying he's a good person. He's another of my problematic faves. This guy works hard, studies his ass off, serious, sober minded, gets maimed, and no matter what he does, no matter how better his claim is, he's going to get fucked on this inheritance thing. And you can tell it really sticks in his craw, but also. There's this frustration, I think I'm reading this correctly, is that he can't have it any other way because he is the dutiful soldier and he does know what's right and he's not going to usurp the throne from his brother, you know?
Yeah.
Although there's a point where I think he's really tested. Like, I think it's real interesting if Sir Criston Cole takes 5 more seconds to get the Aegon at the end. You know, Aemon might just let him run off and go to that ship.
Yeah, get on a boat and never come back. Yeah, but he's real tempted in that moment.
And this is the moment where I realize that he's just checking a box off for like, okay, I'm next in line for the throne. I want to make sure everybody knew that I was with the King's Guardman trying to help my brother, ever the dutiful soldier, so that I can go back to the Cat Red Keep and shine up my forehead for throne wearing. not for throne wearing, for crown wearing when they come to try to find me.
I mean, what is a throne if not a crown you wear on your ass?
A lot of people have said it.
they have. Okay.
One thing about
reading
Aemond,
different
though,
books, I guess.
why does Aemon think that he's next in line to the throne? Because they've established that Aegon already has children. I think male children.
Oh, shit.
So, like, he's got that he's got that succession where it's got to go. You got to exhaust the first bloodline before you can back up, reverse the intro and have it refunnel through you.
Yeah, you're right. He's probably mistaken.
Although there are babies, I do wonder if he would be more likely to be made like the king regent or the, you know, protector of the realm and rule in their stead. It'd probably be him or instead Otto or Alicent. Instead of who?
Helena?
Oh, wouldn't I don't think Helena queen would be. Because she's not even... I mean, if he ran off right now, he's not even king yet. He's just prince. Well, yeah, so she's not queen.
Fair.
So yeah, I would think they would go with the Dowager Queen or Otto or Aemon. But Aemon, yeah, I thought that was one thing that bugged me. If Aemon knows everything so much, like why does he think he's the presumptive heir?
Gotcha. Yeah.
Anyway.
It's a little weird. Maybe he needs
to
study.
I love Aemon now.
A little harder.
This one-eyed Bo Burnham looking motherfucker has really, really won me over. It was hard work and determination and grit.
Yeah, I'm not quite there on him. He needs a little more charm. You got to charm me. I'm sorry. Damon's the charmer, Aemond.
Have you seen his visual album inside, though? I mean, God damn, he's got my loyalty just for that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's real good. Lord Caswell tries to leave King's Landing, but he's stopped at the gates by Laris. Otto has him taken away, and Laris tells Otto that he's willing to serve him if he so wishes. Sure. We talked about what a dummy Lord Caswell is. Just trying to walk right at the main gates here. It might have worked, too, if Laris didn't have eyes on everything.
Yeah, that's the thing. Is like I found it interesting that they panned to him kind of taking a note of who was the kneelers, who's the non-kneelers, who was the late kneelers. I wonder if he like wrote down with a stopwatch, like approximate time till knee hit pavement. You know, though the guys are O.00. Those guys are leal. They were good for them. This guy, he hesitated for a quarter second. I think so. He just had all of his eyes and spies watching these folk.
It also didn't help that during that request for fealty that he looked like he hadn't urinated in 6 days and had been drinking water constantly. He's like looking around at the exits. He's looking around at other people. He's so sweating. Shifty.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Also, Lord Caswell, you need a crime cloak. Hello?
Crime cloak.
They're only $5.99 in Flea Bottom. Just buy yourself a crime cloak, wrap it around you, and you're invisible. You can be a Kingsguard, you can be a king, you can be a prince of the realm, and no problem. You can be the fucking hand. Having a bowl of stew in Flea Bottom with the white worm, and nobody's going to recognize you because you got that crime cloak on. And the fact that he wouldn't spend the money just goes to show what kind of hot water Rhaenyra is in, because these are her allies.
Right,
cheap, they're too dumb to wear crime clothes. Allies.
Too cheap, too. All right, Alicent frets and cries as Viserys's body is wrapped. Then she goes to Rhaenys to tell her what's happening and make the case for supporting their coup. Rhaenys questions why Alicent is fighting so hard to stay under the thumb of the men in her life, and Alicent leaves her to think about her answer.
I love this scene.
Yeah.
I love it when Alicent comes in there and she's like, that's my husband's dying wish. And like the amount of eye rolling that Rhaenys did there. Mm-hmm. And then like I really liked how Eve Best's eyes just blazed when Alicent is just, she does not like to be told her business. Mm-hmm. And Alicent's doing that. And then in the end, she kind of like shows what a game of checkers she's been playing compared to what she could have been done. Like, I still think that moment where she leans in and says, have you never thought about you being on the Iron Throne, is fascinating, because it's clear to me, because Olivia Cooke emoted it, that is a new thought, that this isn't out of context problem that Alicent is grappling with. She's never even dreamed of reaching that high.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Otto's definitely imagined himself on the throne. I can tell you that much. Yeah. I love the line, you desire not to be free, but to make a window in the wall of your prison. That's such a good line. Yes. There's a lot of really good dialogue in this scene, but that one stood out to me.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's, I think it's the best pitch, because she does make a good pitch. It's like, you know, your house has been aligned with Rhaenyra since the beginning. And what has it got you? All your kids are dead. Your house is a disgrace. It's going to go to bastards, and we all know it. And, you know, here is a way out for you. And I thought Rhaenyra, like, there, I think there's a sequence that she said that Rhaenys would have accepted. But what her final summation is, like, you're this close to being smart enough to getting away with what you think you're going to get away with. But because you're going for the window option in the cell, you and I are not the same. Yeah. So it kind of doomed Alicent's prospects of winning her over. That's the way I read it, though. Do you still think that she declared for Team Green at the end?
No, I've changed my mind. Especially after watching the inside the episode thing. But definitely on second watch, I'm like, well, okay, what are the possibilities here?
Yeah.
We can talk about them when we get to the end. All right, Aemon and Cole walk the streets of King's Landing and spot Otto meeting with Masseria. Masseria tells Otto where Aegon is in exchange for ending the child fighting rings. And the twins go to the Sept and find Aegon hidden in the altar. They try and take him to Otto, but Cole and Aemon find them. And the Green Twins... No, Green Twin fights Cole while Aemon tackles Aegon. A Black Twin just turns and leaves. And then Cole takes Aegon back to the Queen. Probably should have broken that up into two scenes. We could talk about the Masseria stuff first.
I think Eric is the one who... stays, and Arik is the one who is content to kind of let the chips fall and abandons his brother.
Yeah, I don't care. They're Green Twin, Black Twin for me from now on.
But I think you actually got their alignment wrong when you said that.
That's not possible. Green Twin is doing the duty of
That's why I think the subtitles are wrong in some of these scenes, because like this.
Well, I called him Green Twin because he's doing the duty of the hand. He fights Cole. And Black Twin just turns and leaves, right? Because Black Twin is not going to go along with this bullshit.
I would think so, but like again, I've read the book, so I know which one is which side, and they're messing it up.
Oh, fuck.
And as I said, that's not a spoiler, because at this point, when the guy clearly steals someone from the Red Keep and says, I'm not going along with this, and he's declared. I just think Black Twin. I think they fucked up the subtitles of who was who. So, and it's going to cause a lot of confusion, I think, in the weeks and battles to come. But
okay,
Eric is the guy who kidnaps, regardless of what the subtitles say, and who you think is who. Eric is the guy who steals Rhaenys out of the Red Keep. Jesus,
not confusing at all in any way, George. Thanks for all of this.
And if it turns out they did fuck up the subtitles, almost like chef's kiss. It's perfect.
Yeah, you couldn't have done a better / worse job.
You played yourself, HBO.
So, what do you think about this Masseria scene? I definitely formed a different opinion of White Worm.
I think it tracks with her character that she has gone through the shit. She has been trafficked. She's been abused and she will not have it for herself anymore. And I'm gratified to see that outrage extends to others, because she wants to do some, like the king. Yeah. The hand handed over a sack of gold. Didn't look like his life changing amount. But what she really wants is for the crown to do the bare fucking minimum and not allow children to be used in King's Landing. Seems a modest request, and God love her for it. We'll see. Now,
it does.
Question.
Yeah.
Is she going to be vindicated, disappointed, or is she actually burnt to a crisp?
I mean, with Otto, you're always going to be disappointed, because Otto's out for Otto. Otto doesn't give a shit about
fighting. That's
a damning
indictment for Otto.
Yeah. Yeah. He doesn't care about that.
Yeah.
Why would he?
Yeah.
He only cares about it when it intersects with Aegon, right? His chosen heir and his puppet. So, if it comes back on Aegon somehow and word gets out about his proclivities, I think he'll care then, but he does not care.
Do you think Otto knows about his proclivities? Because I kind of got that with the scene between Eric and him where he's, you know, demanding him to count himself. And he's like, you know, the king abuses authority and, you know, goes away and does things in the night. I thought there's a significant glance where Otto kind of backed off. Because like what if well,
like he knew if, and he didn't want to reveal he knew.
There's a sworn protector of a minor prince, minor in age. Does he inform the hand or the king or anybody or the Lord Commander of the prince doing crazy dangerous shit at night? Or is he see his duty as to keep the that confidence no matter what?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Yeah. Hmm. I honestly don't know what
it's tough to calibrate on that because I've seen Kristen Cole, right?
So that's a guy's absolutely willing to keep secrets.
Uh-huh.
For carnal reasons. Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know how to calibrate.
But that's I thought for sure that Otto had to know. And he knows exactly what he's putting on the throne. That's how I read it.
Yeah, you're probably right. But he just thinks he can control him.
I think so. Big mistake. He's making the Tywin Lannister gambit, mm-hmm. and he's no Tywin Lannister.
No.
Tywin Lannister, rather.
You know, I always thought the White Worm was in it for her own ends, her own fortune. But here it's clear that she's trying to actually change the realm for the good. And yeah, that I can get down with.
Yeah, absolute good. There's no... Who says no to this? You know?
The people making money off the child fighting pits. They say no, but fuck them.
Yeah.
I'm still... not at all a fan of this accent. They're stuck with it though. Like, what can you do? I've seen characters recast entirely. I've never seen a character re-accented midway. Like, that would be more jarring than seeing the mountain show up and wait,
Wanda Maximoff in the Marvel Cinematic Universe had the plotting big trouble for Moose and Squirrel that she was rolling her mouth around in age, and that slowly just went the fuck away until they clowned on it in WandaVision. So there is precedent.
Okay,
if an accent is so bad,
yeah,
that it's like, well, you know, she spent a lot more time in King's Landing, she's lost it. You know, she made a real effort as in her capacity of White Worm to.
I hope they fast track that because boy, I'm not a fan of this, and it's not because it's French. It's not because it sounds vaguely like a mix of African and French. It's just weird. And I don't associate it with Essos at all. But
I mean, it definitely sounds exotic, but I think it's like, I think that.
But not in the way that.
Because I think the person that, like, you know, I don't want to beat them up too bad. They're probably not listening to this podcast from the tenor of their email anymore. But like, I think saying that's a French accent is actually culturally insensitive to France. And I think what she was going for was a pastiche of like truly making an exotic accent. Like, it's going to be a little bit recognizably this, a little bit recognizably that, and a little bit. And it just like, I don't even have a trouble understanding it. It just sounds weird and bizarre.
Mm-hmm.
It's distracting.
I agree. Equally distracting was when the woman at the brothel said, frequent. Frequent?
Frequent.
Did you catch that? Yeah. I had to put on subtitles to even understand
frequent.
What she was saying.
Yeah,
yeah, it's frequent. Come on.
Yeah, she's just she's putting her own spin on frequent.
Sure, I guess. Well, was that her audition for her next role right there? I mean, look how I said this word.
Really put the
stank
on it.
Never heard that before, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, now we get Aemond tempted by Aegon's offer to get on a ship and run away, which we talked about earlier. I wanted to point out that Laenor did the same. He's the other king, right, who wanted to run away and did in that case. I thought there
Do
was
you think there'll
some
be,
parallel there.
Because this, granted, it's early in the morning, but not super early in the morning. Like, people are starting to get up. People are about the streets. Looks like people who are middle-class merchants, maybe even some minor lords, are seeing mm-hmm. this. And you've got the king who's going to be anointed mere hours later screaming, mm-hmm. I didn't wanna, like, essentially the call of Jon Snow for anyone that wants to see and hear, just throw in the worst fit where you got king king's guards and princes beating him up and taking him. Like, do you think that might be a counter narrative that gets exploited later? Or
it's lucky for him that a dragon bust up through the floor at the coronation, because I think that's going to take all of the heat off of anybody talking about
that's going to suck the oxygen out of the news cycle. Okay.
Yeah,
fair
totally.
Enough. Fair enough. Yeah.
Yeah. Westerosi Press is going to be writing about that, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, yeah, you're probably right. But I did wonder when it's like, man, this is an awful public scene, and they established that people are noticing and watching.
Yeah, you're right. So Otto sends some more messages, and Allison tells him that she has Aegon, and they're going to send terms to Rhaenyra that she can accept. Aegon will be anointed the next day at dawn, and he'll be named the Conqueror and carry Blackfyre. Aegon the First's sword. I think it's Aegon the First, right?
Yep.
Is Aegon the Conqueror Aegon the First?
As far as we know.
Okay.
None of the Targaryens were kings before. They were dragon riders in Valyria, so yes, 100%.
Cool.
He's first of his name.
Correct, Allison. You were being used your entire life, and you should have seen this way earlier. Kills me that you didn't.
She's realizing it now. She sees her father for what he really is.
I know.
And she's a child, and like her father's just sloppy attempt at manipulation at the end. Because she's already saying, she's like, look, here's where it's going to happen. We're going to give Rhaenyra good terms, which she can accept without sacrificing her pride. I want to try. I want to fucking try to get this done peacefully and legit. But I'm also going to make this, like I said, a fait accompli, where it's just, I'm just going to put the sword in his hand, the crown on his head, the high priest, the high septon's going to anoint him. Everyone in the king, the King's Landing is going to see it. We're going to send ravens everywhere. And it's just going to, we're going to dominate the information war. We're going to dominate this space. And I think it's like Otto genuinely does, like, because he thinks that she's preaching his weak shit about Rhaenyra. But then when she goes the other side and says, here's all the very smart, politically savvy plays I'm going to make, he actually respects her. But it's like she doesn't. In fact, I think it's fascinating that there is a little bit of a split in House Green or in Team Green here. Like, I don't know that the Queen and the Hand are simpatico at this point.
No, I don't think so. It's kind of the story of Otto, right? He's sloppy. He gets a plan 95% of the way across the goal and gets what he wants, but the consequences just spin out from him, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like he's successfully manipulated his daughter her entire life, but now it's coming back to bite him because she's realizing it, and of course that would happen eventually, right? I don't know.
He's no Littlefinger. He's no Varys. That's for sure.
Yeah. I mean, even Littlefinger, granted it took a long time, but he got caught up in his own shit, too.
True.
I don't know. There's a lot of just like Otto is an idiot energy in this scene. Like when she's talking about like, my husband never wanted Rhaenyra put to the sword. Do you really think that's what he wanted when he said for Aegon to be king? And Otto's like, oh, your husband or you, his daughter's childhood companion? Both, you fucking idiot.
Right, like, right.
Reluctance to murder, as she says, is not a weakness, and neither is love. Get fucked, old man.
Yeah.
Christ.
No, he's first of all, great toady voice. I love it. Second of all, you're right on. You're spot on. Otto's the worst.
And then she rolls her eyes at this pathetic old fuck as she walks out the door. He talks about sacrifice in this scene. Oh, now's the time to pay the cost. He wants other people to pay that cost for him. Fuck him.
Yeah, no, again, hotdiaballmove.com if you want to defend Otto Hightower. And again, you're defending a lot here.
Oh, yeah.
You're de facto defending child savage fighting rings because the implication
is... And foot fetishists. Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know if Otto knows about that. We're going to get to an interesting scene between him and Larry here in a minute, aren't we? Or have we already gone through that?
I think we already talked about that, yeah, where he kind of pledges himself to help Otto.
Is it? Okay, because I remember that now, because that happened and we didn't get to fully discuss it.
He suggested.
Is that the first potentially fatal mistake that Larry's making, that he's trying to hedge his bets with the Queen and the Hand, and he thinks that now that the King is dead, that the power is going to flow through the Hand rather than the King, or rather than the queen, and he wants to get ahead of that?
Yeah, that latter could be.
Will there be a power struggle between the Queen and the Hand? Because I just wonder, you know, if he fucks over Alicent at the expense of her father, or at her expense, rather. And Queen Alicent could get enough juice to have him strung up. She probably would, wouldn't she? because she kind of only barely tolerates this guy.
Yeah, I mean, maybe Larry is just feeling out how it's going to shake out with the king, right? Like, who's going to have the most influence over this guy? And I want to keep my options open right now because it's very much in flux.
It's just sloppy to do that to people to talk to each other in private. It's real dangerous game.
Yeah.
To be like, oh, you know, I'll play both sides, my liege. You know, like, it's oof.
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll have to see where the, you know, where the other shoe drops, where the other foot pulls off its socking.
Yeah, I guess let's get to it. So the next scene is the Larry foot fetish scene. Can you tell me what happens in this scene? Because my brain just won't register anything but disgust.
Yeah, they're playing a game where he reveals more and more information. It's every scene, every criminal informant scene you've seen in any cop show where it's
where the cops take off their shoes and wriggle their toes and
instead
each
of $20 bills being passed, it's pinky toes and stockings and
pinky toes, the worst toe. Objectively the worst toe.
It does seem superfluous. Why do we need five toes?
At least the big toe has size and stability. Yeah. The little toe?
I don't think the pinky gets you anything. It just gets you stubbed. It's the most stubbed toe. That's a fact.
True.
Because it's on the outside. I think we should dock human children's toes when they're babies. Stop the circumcision shit. Just cut off.
Sure, shave down their teeth in the pits. Yeah.
They don't got no teeth when they're born, Jim. Come on. But they got pinky toes. You can nip them off, and then we'd give evolution a head start.
Oh, man.
Four toes for humanity's future.
Sure. And then Laris can have a four-toed foot on his staff.
Okay. I've been thinking about this a lot. I'm creeped out by the foot fetish for a couple of reasons. One is because it's done at Allison's expense. This is not something that they're mutually enjoying. This is some level of prostitution and, you know, him taking some kind of delight. I think it, part of it is him getting off on her being disgusted. And it's just a lot of, and the fact that Allison's not down with it, it just makes me feel uncomfortable. I don't know about how I feel making a person with a foot disability fetishize feet. I could go both.
Yeah.
I don't think it's necessarily out of bounds because I could see, you know, this guy has been made to feel weird about this his entire life. He's been judged by it. You know, he's been made to feel like an outcast. His father never gave any hint about this, but I'm sure growing up, you know, he's made to feel very weird about it. So it doesn't blow my hair back to find out someone would fetishize something like that, you know, but it's pretty on the edge, I think. I think it's more of like someone wrote in about showing someone with a disability being evil, if you just pile on a whole bunch of sexual dysfunction on top of that, I can see how that could get pretty gross. And it's really wild because it seems like the writing room in the show is pretty ultra progressive, almost to a distracting degree, because like most of the Allison prophecy stuff is just them being weird that the audience might turn on one of these women. You know, and like miss the point of like, well, women can rule too, but they just like, man, they're really memeing close to the sun with a disabled person being evil and a sex pervert on top of all that. And I just want to acknowledge that point of view because there's a lot of things make you uncomfortable in this scene. I think that should be one of them.
Absolutely. Point number two, feet are objectively the grossest part of the human body.
Nope. Okay.
And I'm talking anuses. I'm talking pits.
I don't know if I have a full blown foot fetish, but I do like an attractive foot, and I'm going to gainsay a King Jaehaerys, and I think feet can be beautiful too.
I'm the king. I'm outlawing feet. No feet in my realm. Yep.
Going to hobble the whole realm because you're going to yuck everyone's yum. Okay. Sure.
King Jaehaerys. Right.
Really testing my loyalties here. Really testing my resolve as Lord Commander. Oh,
yeah,
geez.
You might have to step down. Oh man,
might have to befoot the king.
No,
if
no.
If we're going to hobble, we're going to remove feet. We're going to start with yours, Your Majesty. It's only fair.
That's the sacrifice I'm willing to make. I'm the Otto Hightower here, except I'm paying for it with my feet.
Someone who's grossed out by feet, you're talking a lot about them, Your Majesty. Is all I'm saying. There.
It's just some Freudian thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Tell it on yourself.
So here, okay, my brain didn't only register disgust, it also registered that Otto Hightower has been using, or at least aware and left in place, this network of spies the White Worm has. I assume that's what some of these notes have been about, because we've always wondered, like, who is he sending notes to? Why would he send a note at this time to anybody? This makes a lot more sense, I think, right?
Yeah,
am I supposed to read it that way?
Yes, but also, I don't know that this is an objectively bad thing. I think that Solaris is only starting this fight because it's a competition to him.
What fight?
Why can't the Hand make use of a spy network in King's Landing? Should he root it out?
Sure, no. It has a
great amount of utility to a leader of state, you know? Well, Solaris doesn't like it because it competes with him.
Well, and I think the thing that he's really putting up here is he is trying to kind of pit Allison and Otto against each other a little bit by telling Allison, hey, you've been watched by this network and your father knew about it and he let it continue to happen.
Yeah, that's another even more dangerous game he's playing. Like, I don't know, man. This guy might just be fucking bug nuts.
Yeah, he might not be as smart as we think he is.
Well, like he's just a watch the world burn kind of guy. Like, he just doesn't care. I mean, we know he is. I mean, yeah, he's hard to gauge because he murders his family that he has no beef with, just cause.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Guy's crazy about feet. That's a long play for feet. That's all I'm saying. Steep cost and a long play.
Agreed. But I mean, honestly, if you're foot motivated, there are no better feet in the realm than the queen's, right?
I don't know if that's objectively true, but like if you put the power dynamic on, yeah, those are powerful.
Exactly.
Feet.
Yeah. Those are the feet you want to see.
Sure.
Anyway. All right. Everyone sits around thinking and waiting for the dawn. Then the black twin sneaks Rhaenys out of her room and we see White Worm's headquarters burning. I don't believe it. I don't believe that Laris actually burned White Worm. I think her house burned, but she did not.
If the worm is half as white as I think she is, if the worm turns half as hard as I think she does, I think she, yeah, there's no way Laris takes her out that easy.
Yeah, I agree.
But
I really like these moments to just reflect on the stakes, you know, the quiet, like we've set all this up, things are about to actually happen, but let's just sit with the characters for a moment. And I feel like shows don't give us that often enough, because like,
and
just showing
just a little
people looking out the windows and thinking about what they're about to go through with gives me a chance to do the same.
Yeah, and also they're doing the showing that like as well prepared and planned as the Greens are, they can't control everything. They got bug nuts, Laris. They got Eric with a conscience, and you know, they got lords that won't bend and ladies that won't bend the knee, and this stuff is going to get out of their control. And I think that they really do a good job of showing that too.
There's still lots of hot D left to talk about. We'll be right back after the break.
We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R. R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Commission podcasts are an awesome feature here at Bald Move that allows you, the individual listener, to decide what we talk about for a single podcast.
The community loves it because it often leads to fun, fan-favorite films and TV shows that we've overlooked getting the coverage they deserve.
And we love it because we're constantly exposed to great stuff that's not even on our radar.
The way it works is simple. You go to support.baldmove.com and you click on commissions. Then you pay the flat rate for the commission and tell us what two-ish hours of content you'd like us to make podcasts on.
Then we'll contact you for details, advanced feedback, and any dedications you'd like to make.
Then we watch the thing, discuss the thing, turn it into a podcast, and pump it right into your ears.
We get consistently great feedback on how much our commissioners love their podcast, and they make great gifts for the dedicated Bald Move fan in your life.
And who knows, that dedicated fan could even be you. Treat yourself. Check out support.baldmove.com for more info. And now, back to Hot D. Speaking of being out of control, Rhaenys gets swept up in the crowd being taken to Aegon's coronation and loses Black Twin in the process. Oh, and we see Caswell's dead as he walks her out. He's
swinging in the Red Keep.
He's been hanged.
It's funny. I think that I felt like the heir could have used his position as Lord Commander, or not Lord Commander, as Kingsguard to kind of bully and gainsay the City Guard at the beginning. Mm-hmm. But then on like subsequent watches, I'm like, well, I don't know, because this happens so fast. Like his snap judgment, I'd be like, well, I could pull rank, but then I would absolutely be identified and run the risk of she being identified. And
well, he's in more full Lord Commander armor, or not Lord Kingsguard, Commander, yeah. Full Kingsguard mm-hmm. armor in this.
Right.
So but he's still identified.
One of them would be known that like people would figure out, like, I don't know if he's trying to remain hidden or if he just like doesn't want to get busted with Rhaenys because he knows he's got this one shot. And also, how the hell would he know that they're going to rouse everyone from King's Landing and hustle them to the Dragon Pit? Like, this was not a plan that he was in on. So, like, you know, it's like, oh, we'll try this out. Oh, and by the time he's like, fuck, we're fucked, it's too late. And Rhaenys also didn't want, you know, she wanted to get away. And I love that smile when she realizes she's being herded towards a Dragon Pit. She's like, fuck, yeah, like
exactly where I want to be.
It's like Tom Cruise being herded towards the airport. Like, yeah, I just got to get in. Yeah. To the Air Force Base, I guess. I don't know he's going to do it in an Airbus.
No, probably not.
On an Air Force Base, he's dangerous. He's a dangerous man. Or Navy Base. Shit. I was like three levels wrong about Tom Cruise there. Anyway.
So Alicent tells Aegon that Viserys changed his mind on his deathbed as they're kind of headed to the Dragon Pit, and gives him Viserys' dagger, and she tells him not to order Rhaenyra killed, no matter how much Otto wants it.
I'm going to double down on my criticism of the instant take, is that this knife thing, I think on the face of it, doesn't make any sense. Like, I can get what they're going with it, that this is Viserys' special blade and probably everybody knew about it. But it took him from being openly skeptical and scornful of his mother's claim and him just not want to, like, to the point of tears move, like, don't play with me. Don't play with me now. Like, what? And they needed a scene in earlier episodes where that was the thing that he gave to his heir or something, you know, and they just didn't establish that, like that was something he was jealous of Rhaenyra, that her father and him shared the secret of the blade or something with the blade that he knew was important about. But they didn't. I don't know if it's on the cutting room floor or what, but it was a weird resolution to the conflict that Alicent and Aegon were feeling in that carriage.
I don't know. I've come around on this scene a little bit more.
Help me out.
Aegon's reaction. I think they've done the bare minimum required to say this dagger is a symbol of the king. It's like if she had opened this box and Viserys' crown was in it, you would understand immediately, right? The like, oh, no, this is no joke. We're on the way to the coronation. I am going
to
be
they are
crowned.
On the way to the coronation.
Uh-huh.
Like, no, yeah, she's
know,
saying
but
in an hour you'll be king. And
uh-huh. But he thinks she's fucking with him because like, but I'm not the heir. Rhaenyra is the heir, right? Like, this is insane. He has no idea that there is a plot afoot to put him on the throne until she pulls out this symbol of the king and shows it to him, puts it in his hand and says, yeah, you're the king now. You're about to be the king.
Why would he think his mother would fuck with him when she's been screaming this for 10 years in his ear that you need to get ready for this moment? That's like,
yeah,
they did a way better job setting up that through line than the knife being the like, oh, my God, mom, it's real. I know you got me in the royal fucking carriage. Take me to the Dragon Pit. Tell me I'm going to be a king in an hour. But like now it's real.
But
like,
then you
I
had his dad for 20 years saying, not going to happen.
And I said,
kid.
That was a really, I agreed with everything Aegon was saying. I just don't know why the knife brought it around. Gotcha. And I felt like they were missing a little something there. It was a little weak.
But the crown would have done it, right? And as much as the crown is,
I don't know that anyone
has
done it. I don't know
too.
Why. Like to me, he should have been a sullen prick until they put the sword in his hand and the crowd started cheering. Like that could bring him around believably. But the knife starting it, I don't know. I and maybe it makes sense to some people. And again, it doesn't not make sense. I tracked with it. It just I wish there was something to build that other than just blind faith in the showrunners that they're not fucking up.
I will say the coronation scene is even more entertaining. If Aegon's like walking out, yeah, it's all bullshit to the crowd. Not gonna happen.
Where's the camera? Is right. Yeah, you're not gonna. Yeah,
I am not the heir, guys. I don't know what you're doing here, but I'm not falling for it.
Nobody's punking this guy. I'm not falling for it.
Boy. Here's the most hilarious line in the episode, perhaps, is when Allison tells Aegon, You can't just rule, or you can't rule with cruelty and callousness. And she is talking to a guy who files down children's teeth and watches them fight. That guy's
she's
probably not going to rule with cruelty.
That's the thing.
Or callousness.
She's in total denial of Aegon. Like when she's confronted with his hideousness, she says, well, "You're no son of mine," which she doesn't believe. So she must reject. You know, it's fucked up, but I think they're doing a good job of telling that story that you know, she's just in denial. Like she can confront it in a moment, but every time she slaps him and says, "You're no son of mine," she thinks that cured him.
Right. Like imagine everything she's done, all the forsaking of her friend that she's done over the years is done for a shit, just a worthless guy. That's not worthy of any.
Yeah,
of it.
No, that's one of the big ironies of the story is that Allison's trying to avoid sitting something monstrous on the throne in defiance of everything good and holy and lawful. And in doing so, she's putting a monster on the throne.
Yeah. When and the armor
Jacerys
that
is
she's
a perfectly nice guy
that she has to wear against that idea. Right. Because like she can't let herself admit that.
Right.
That would be ruinous to her. So
yeah, it would make her whole life a lie. And she's kind of like already skittering on the edge of that realization this episode already. Like,
oh,
you know, she's
with the auto stuff for sure.
Yeah. Like she's getting a third step Martin reveal on auto being an asshole. He hinted at it through prophecy and innuendo. He for the sharper readers, he revealed it 3 episodes ago. But now he's just going to smack you around with it. Look, your dad's just a fucker.
Yep.
So
it's true. All right. The coronation ceremony begins. Aegon is crowned king, but Rhaenys kind of ruins his moment when she sneaks behind beneath the dragon pit, mounts her dragon and busts through the floor, and her dragon roars in Team Green's face and then flies away with her on it, by the way.
The optics on this look amazing. You're going through the dragon pit, the seat of Targaryen power. This is a huge building. The novel says it holds up to 80,000 people. So if you've ever been to Cowboys Stadium or any large NFL stadium, that's approximately what we're talking about in a medieval sense. Place is jam-packed. You got the king, you know, again, like this Blackfyre, Aegon's crown is probably even, it got like a nearly mystical association with the Conqueror. He's like just being clothed in all this Targaryen stuff and at the height of their power. And I think the hand is doing a great, he's just gassing Aegon up, you know, and you see the crowds like, oh, the king's dead and he's got a final wish and the crowd's kind of murmuring, but they're talking themselves into it.
Well, I understand he's that like, confusion because you think about like someone standing on a stage in Cowboy Stadium and say, and shouting without amplification, the king, Aegon, and the crowd goes, did he say something? I think.
Yeah.
Shit, I couldn't see. Did his mouth move?
The acoustics of those old places, I heard they're pretty good. But yeah, no,
that's fair. That's fair.
The they have to pass it on to the people in the back. But you know, him saying like, you know, as a new king, a new day for the realm. This is your honor, your privilege. Like he's just really gassing everybody up. And the septum blesses him, invokes all the seven as he lays all these blessings on him. And then the new Lord Commander puts the king, like it seems all bright and prim and proper.
Mm-hmm.
And then Malus just blows up in the middle of that shit.
Yeah. Amazing.
And Aegon, I like the, like, right as they put the crown, like, he's waiting for that crown to come down, he looks exactly like one of the Doom men in the Green Mile, speaking of Team Green, that's being strapped to the electric chair. Like, you talking about flop sweat, you're talking about, like, look like you're about to dry vomit, or dry heave. Like, this guy is just going through all this because it's just real and it's happening to him. And then, yeah, Malus busts out in the middle of it. Okay. I don't understand the tactics and the strategy of busting out and just escaping when you could have turned Team Green to ash.
I don't either.
Afterwards,
there is an explanation from the creative team that we can talk
about. So I wrote this down. This is essentially a joint statement by Ryan Condal and Miguel Sapochnik. They stitched these guys' sentences together. So, like, it's like the first sentence
you're talking about inside the episode.
Inside
after
the episode. Yeah, this first sentence is like Sapochnik goes, Sand just comes going back and forth. This is essentially a joint statement from the showrunners. They say, we wanted her, Rhaenys's character, to have meat. Rhaenys was not passive. It was a valuable moment to have her, rather than just bear witness to this, to take part. But her moral standpoint became the reason for inaction and not action. If she sets fire to that dais, she spares the realm war, but she also doesn't want to be responsible for doing that to another mother, which is a complex choice that a lot of people are going to have a problem with. That last is by Condal. A fucking min that people are going to have a problem with that, because
you know it, right?
The queen who never was is going to get sentimental about a mother.
Mm-hmm.
What about Rhaenys has ever, like, and they make her look so fucking hard when she busts out of the ground on a giant dragon wearing this badass armor, and she gets motherly feelings towards this usurper? I don't know. I don't know if I buy it. I think that's some bullshit. So,
yeah, there are a couple of reasons I don't buy it. That's one of them. The other one is, if you're saying that by torching all of these people up here on this dais, the realm is going to avoid war, I don't think you've been watching your own show. Because the realm... the show you've been making has told me that the realm is not going to accept Rhaenyra regardless. The realm is coming for war if Rhaenyra is on the throne. And if Rhaenys blows this situation up, that's what happens. Rhaenyra takes the throne as the rightful heir, and then war ensues. The realm comes after her because they don't want a woman on the throne.
Yeah, but man, you do.
She's like, unwilling to kill this mother so that a man can usurp Rhaenyra's authority and Rhaenyra's power? Like, who is this? Who is Rhaenys? I don't know. I'm very confused by her.
Yeah, the only thing that makes sense to me is if she wanted to become, like I said, the Switzerland. Like, hey, I'm going to go to Driftmark with my dragons and my granddaughters, and we're sitting all this out. And, you know, if you make me declare, I'll declare. And it seems like I don't know if I agree with the dragon calculus, but maybe that Melis is like, everything's balanced. You've got the one big dragon and a couple minor dragons with some inexperienced dragon riders against what has to be the best battle rider in the kingdom, Daemon. Probably the only guy that's ridden his dragon to war in this lifetime. You got Rhaenyra, who has a large, fierce dragon. And you got her three boys that have dragons, although who knows how they're probably more like Daenerys size, you know, dragons against. And it's like, if Melis is on either side of that, it imbalances the equation. So, like, I would thought that they were going to go with that. Like, OK, well, she's just going to try to be Switzerland. And maybe she's forced to declare later on for one side or the other. But, like, that's not what the showrunner said. The showrunner said, like, she just felt she didn't want to be. Like, oh, well, what's the politically optics if she burns these usurpers? I'm like, who the fuck cares? Burn them and let, you know, get over the Rhaenyra, get back over to King's Landing while the head is decapitated, the bees are flying around purposely, and consolidate your power. But it's a weird, and again, it's not fatal. It's just, I don't understand it from the character who I thought Rhaenys was.
Yeah, which makes me question whether I know her or not. There's another thing inside the episode where they reveal maybe more than I expected them to. I assumed that Rhaenys was going to fly directly to Dragonstone to tell Rhaenyra of the king's death and catch her up, but they just come out and say it. They say, yep, that's where she's headed. That's exactly what she's planning to do. I kind of wish they would have left that up in the air, because then we could have speculated about, is she going to be completely neutral, the Switzerland of the thing, or is she going to fly and tell Rhaenyra? Because that is going and telling Rhaenyra, and this is one of the reasons I flipped on whether she was declaring for green or independent or Rhaenyra, is that's proclaiming yourself a Rhaenyra, going against the wishes and telling Rhaenyra exactly what happened. Yeah, I mean, Otto sees that as a betrayal for sure.
Yeah, I don't, man, I tell you what, because like I, as a book reader, the next week on is just massive spoilers. And I felt like HBO didn't watch this stuff. I don't think people should. I honestly don't think, unless you're a book reader, you should watch, because there's been several times that big fucking reveals that you should have just been able to enjoy watching an episode are spoiled in these little 45 second things. I don't know. Maybe this is leftover of like HBO being a little bit not confident that this series was going, and they needed to have sizzle. They need, because this actually reminds me, this reminds me of AMC type shit, where it's like,
I've long said, if you can't convince me to watch the next episode with the episode, a next time on is not going to do it. Sorry. Yeah.
So like I to me, this smacks of like syndication and just like massive inferiority complex, and like it's not needed. Like, all you needed to get people hyped for next week is a couple of tense shots of people's faces reacting to stuff and some sick Ramin Djawadi chords, and people are going to be like, let's fucking go. But instead, maybe it's because I've read the books, so it's like I'm like, there's that scene. But like, it's, to me, I thought it was like brazenly spoilery. So like, as I said, I'm more confident than ever that we just don't need to be talking about, and until HBO gets her shit together and starts, you know, marketing with more teasing and less revealing, then I just don't. Yeah. And I've gotten a lot of people's appreciation for that, because it just gives away too much.
Yeah, I specifically skipped it and went straight to the inside the episode.
Having said that, this next episode is going to be a fucking all-time banger. I'm telling you what.
Nice. I don't know
if it's possible. I don't know if it's possible for them to bobble the ball at this point. But like, holy cow. I'm only interested in how they leave it.
Yeah. You know?
And whether it's going to be like a 90-minute episode or not. But like, yeah, it's, oh boy, I can't wait for Sunday, man.
No, I mean, this is a great. This episode is a great teaser for the next one. Like, I want to see, desperately, I want to see the retort from Black.
What is Team Black's response? Yep.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, is like, they're going to be probably, whereas Team Green had a plan ready to go, I think Team Black's going to be caught completely flat-footed. Because again, so much of what happened in the last few episodes has been very embellishing. Like, Rhaenyra is in a point where, like, In the dark of night, where Team Green's going to work, she's thinking, man, I can't wait to see my best friend. Uh-huh. I'm going to fly over my dragon, see Alice. I'm going to have breakfast with my dad. And me. Maybe this is the start of a new day for me and Alicent. We're going to catch up, and I'm going to apologize to her, and we're going to really pour our hearts out and braid each other's hair and maybe steal away on my dragon to eat some jam cakes or whatever the fuck I want. And she's just going to like be completely caught off guard by all this.
And what a huge betrayal, right? She has to think Allison was in on this from the start. And that Allison was plastering on that smile and that handshake and that hug. And this was all under the surface. She has to assume that. Yeah.
And that's where I think, you know, a lot of people poo-pooed the time jumps, and a lot of people said this, but if you've hung with the show to this part, like the enmity that the mistakes and the misinterpretations and everything, like, it's just going to, like, there's real genuine heat now here, because you're right. Now, I don't think this is ever personal for Rhaenyra.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
It's always been like, shit, I wish my friend didn't misinterpret this, or I wish my friend wasn't so stuck up about this, blah, blah, blah. But it wasn't ever personal. Mm-hmm. This is fucking personal.
Yes, very.
She's gone and done through it on the next day after they made nice and kissed, and Rhaenyra totally fell for it.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, we didn't talk about this, but Lord Beesbury, I think, raised an objection that you think that more than one person in a realm is going to, which is which one of you fuckers here poisoned the king's cup?
Yeah, yeah. I think she would probably wonder about that. I mean, especially when she sees the state that he was in and how much different potions and fluids they were pumping into him. Yeah. I can see
it. So we are really poised. Like I said, this has been one of the longest prologues to a prequel that I've ever seen, but I think it's going to be so worth it. It's going to make all the spectacle that we're going to be seeing in the episodes and the seasons to come just mean so much more.
Yeah.
And people are so fucking invested. And again, it's almost no blood has been spilled.
I am too, man. I'm so excited to see this finale.
I do wonder if this show can deal with the massive swings in mood of the audience. Because, like, you know, I don't think it's too spoiler to say that in war you have, you know, turns of the tide and reversals and advances and this and that. Like, you might have half the fan base screaming bloody murder each and every week and then, you know, like, being exhausted and just turned off. Like, I wonder if they're going to do the job too well and the people will treat this like, yeah. Or is it going to be more like...
I mean, that's
like,
what football fans do, right?
Baseball that's what I was going to say. Is it going to be more like sports whatever. And politics where, like, you can't just disengage? Like, you just... It's like, it just makes you crazy, but you can't stop watching. And I think that's what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And fucking RIP the
it will for me.
And I mean, RIP all the forums and people try to moderate it because, whoo, hot out there.
No, I've talked about how viscerally I dislike watching some of these characters. That doesn't mean I don't enjoy the show and that I won't come back to the show. It just means when they're on screen, I'm going to feel a certain way.
Yeah.
And that's good. That's good. That's them doing their job.
Oh, yeah. I just, like I said, I always want to acknowledge it must be a trip to be, it must be tough. It's not easy being green, as Lord Kermit once said. You know, like, because this show is definitely from I think nakedly from the POV of like the greens are bad actually, and that must be tough. Must be tough repping them out there in the realms. Anyway, we thrown down a couple challenges, especially the Otto is a dick bag. Change our mind. hotd@baldmove.com if you want in on any of that debate. Also, or anything else you want to talk about, don't forget to follow us on twitter.com/baldmove if you want to stay up on all of our releases and what we're doing next, because this season is drawing to a close. And then finally, if you'd like to support us at support.baldmove.com, get ad-free feeds and access to our exclusive to members live instant take and instant talk podcast, where you can, through the magic of YouTube chat, contribute to the podcast in real time. It's pretty cool. And it's exclusive benefit to club members, support.baldmove.com. If you want to know more, hotd@baldmove.com. I think that's it for us this week. We will see you Thursday for the feedback session podcast. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
Later.